Welcome to an all new episode of the Lisa Ann Experience. I am your host, Lisa Ann. First, I would like to express my gratitude to you for making me a part of your listening experience. If you'd like to be a part of the watch party every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time on my YouTube channel, The Real Lisa Ann, we get to watch the video component, sit in the chat and talk. It is a ton of fun. So join that Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern time. I am really excited for the upcoming football season. I mean, we are here. Preseason is happening. My radio schedule is lining up incredibly well, and I may or may not have a crazy announcement for you sometime this coming week. But what I know right now is the shows that I will be visiting, and I'm super excited to be getting back on air. I will start my day on Friday, August 19th at 9:40 a.m. Eastern time with Sports Radio 610 in Houston. Then I will go at 10 a.m. Eastern time to the TMA STL show in St. Louis. From there, I get a little snack break, and then I join my friend, The Word with G, which is in ESPN, Chattanooga, Tennessee. I join G at 12:20 p.m. Eastern time. My spot again, 4:30 Eastern time, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time with WDAE in Tampa, and then a new show added on from a visit that I did that I will be going in studio on August 25th to visit the crew from WFAN. And then moving forward, I will be doing those shows 5:30 p.m. Eastern time remotely starting September 9th. I think we're starting that one. All the rest are going to start on this upcoming Friday, August 19th. And then from there, I will be building other things in my schedule because the football season is here. It's time to get real, real. And that means I need to focus on other topics here on my podcast. Because for those of you who don't play fantasy football, I know everybody doesn't play fantasy football. I know everybody doesn't watch football. I know all of this. And I know that I want to engage and I want to share so many different things with you that I'm doing. And that's where I get to do this here. On the Lisa Ann Experience, I have this incredible range of guests, some friends from my past, from my present, from my future, some authors, some doctors. If you want to get caught up and listen to or watch on my YouTube channel, The Real Lisa Ann, on everything that you missed, I advise you do so. I will keep the sports talk to a minimum here so I can keep you all truly engaged. As you can see behind me, it is a beautiful day. You won't see that till Friday. You might be listening. But it is a beautiful day, and I've been back in the groove of hopping on the city bike and getting into Central Park in the morning and getting in a two-loop ride around the park. It's 6 miles for the full track. I do it twice. It's absolutely beautiful, and we're having some kind of a cooled down nicely. So it's cool this morning. I go out. I didn't look at the weather app. I assumed it was going to be hot. I just wore a short-sleeve shirt, of course. It was chilly, but it felt great. It's so fun to go out early in the city because it's the one time where I'm brave enough to ride on some of the streets, just kind of cruise around. Traffic is light. There's not a lot of pedestrians running out. It's great. So I do a little bit of street riding before and after my ride to the park as well. And then I get in there and I just, as soon as you enter, as soon as you get on that path where they say you're supposed to get off your bike and walk it, I'm not a rule breaker, but for some reason I love breaking that rule. I just love still riding my bike. I read the sign. It says, get off your bike and walk it. And I look at it and I'm like, you know what? Fuck that. I'm not doing that. For some reason, I don't know why. It's not like me to break rules. I wear my seatbelt. I'm a very rule-abiding person. But for some reason, I love going down that little stint there on the bike. And as soon as you make the loop, so I come down the little pathway that I'm not supposed to ride the bike on, that I love to ride the bike on, brings me super joy. I make it through without anybody yelling at me. And then I get on the path. And when you get on the path, the second you turn into the park, the smell in the air is so incredibly different. You know, the city just has a city smell, especially when it's hot and humid. It smells a lot like trash. It smells a lot like a lot of things that aren't uber pleasant. But when you get in there, when I get in there, and I, especially in the morning, it's fresh, it's crisp. And this morning it being so cool and you just smell nature and you're surrounded by nature. And then the visual, there's just so many healthy, active people up early in the morning, running, bike riding, rollerblading, all these different forms of working out. And then it's a dog show with everybody and their adorable dogs, all their different walks. So like I'm back on that tip, and getting that nature in has been so awesome. Gets me so charged for the day. Then I'll go and hit some weights after my ride. So like feeling really great about the city bike groove again. Everybody asks me, why don't you have a bike? I don't really want the responsibility of a bike. I don't really have to change a tire if it's flat. I don't want to have to store it. I don't want to deal with it. It is so easy. Like, you go out, you look at what stand has bikes available. There's a million stands everywhere. So maybe the one closest to you doesn't have bikes, but the locator lets you know which one has bikes. And so you just kind of wander over there, get it, put it back wherever you want at another stand. It is an easy way of life, and I absolutely love it. So a little bit of the new, and then a little bit from the past, right? Because I really got into this during the pandemic was when I signed up for City Bike. They had a special going. It was like a flat rate for the year, and I was like, I'm doing this. And I remember the first 3 months, within 3 months of starting to ride City Bike, you get these notifications when you reach certain goals. And I had rode 1,000 miles in 3 months, but that was when you could ride the whole island on the street. There was no cars. It was super, super cool. Really enjoyed it. So I'm back in that groove. It's a great time for me to like get in a little soft music listening. I was listening to the Sublime channel this morning on Pandora. Get a little soft listening because I know once I get in from that ride, it is going to be fantasy football, sports news, football news, preseason all day, every day from now until like February. Yeah, that is my reality. I am back to only listening to music at the gym, watching only sports shows and listening to only sports shows on the radio. But I absolutely love it. And I love what this new life has brought to me and how many things I've become a fan of and how many things I truly appreciate and how many things I've learned. And I also love the mix of the understanding of my previous life. As I was like transitioning to get out of the business, there became this really big changing of the guards. And people who were coming into the industry were just so much more thoughtful and considerate and really wanted to make everyone involved feel incredibly special and bring out the best in them. Brings me to my guest today, who you can follow on Instagram at the Bree Mills, the chief creative officer of Adult Time, which is a streaming service, which is like the Netflix of porn, so they say. I really enjoy the conversation that I get to have with Bree, and I really love what Bree Mills has brought to the industry today. So for me to get to celebrate my new life while still showcasing the positive sides of my previous life, the positive people involved, and the changes that are ever happening. Before I bring you my guest today, a little message about my sponsor, Blue Chew. Guys, confidence can take you far in life, and it can also help you in the bedroom, especially when it comes to like stepping up to the plate. You know what I mean? That's where Blue Chew comes in. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis in a chewable tablet at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead and be prepared to step up to that plate. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com. You can use my code Lisa, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part? It's all done online, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew is made in the USA and is prepared and shipped directly to you in discreet packaging. Sign up at BlueChew.com today. Use my code Lisa. Today, I get to have a very interesting conversation with the chief creative director of what we call the Netflix of porn, Adult Time, and more. So many more things about you, Bree Mills, that I cannot wait to share with my listeners here. Thank you for joining me. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Bree, you know, you've done incredible work in the industry of just kind of being very thoughtful about everything you've been about. You and I have barely been able to cross paths with me leaving, you know, your real rise and the things that you've done and know the impact you've had on the voices. So can you talk to me about how you've been able to really share voices of sex workers to different mediums?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's, you know, I mean, like life in any form, it is a journey. And certainly my career has definitely been a journey. And, you know, when I first got into the industry, I came sort of from, well, I came from the corporate side of it. You know, I'm an evil marketer at heart. My background is marketing and communications. And I had been working, you know, in the mainstream side of marketing and communications when I was recruited by Gamma. That's the company I'm still with today. And I sort of thought at the time, this was maybe 2008, I was like, well, you know, you know, there's the financial collapse. Porn seems pretty recession proof. I'm open-minded. I'll give it a shot. But I was such an outlier and so super naive. You know, my experience with adult had really been limited to, you know, scrambled pay-per-view and, you know, your brother's magazine underneath the mattress. Like, I really wasn't super well-versed. So coming into the industry from the kind of business side and from the web technology side, I got a chance to work on a lot of other people's content and on a lot of content from across the spectrum. So every, you know, main sexuality and gender preference category, every main niche and kink, you know, and that was like the best university. Because, you know, what motivates me is not so much the sex itself, but just the psychology, you know, what motivates people's desires and what makes somebody go from viewing content, which these days we all can agree you can do for free, to wanting to subscribe and, you know, become a loyal fan of either, you know, a performer or a director or a niche or a studio. So I kind of, without really realizing it, had this great university education on the spectrum of adult content. And when we decided to develop our own brands, you know, again, as a company, we were very used to being the web technology partner of established adult brands.
Yep.
We didn't know how to produce. That was not our experience. So we, you know, had purchased a couple of sites, taken them over, and were wondering, well, why aren't they working anymore? Why aren't people sticking around? What's wrong with this content? It's being shot, right? And so our president, you know, I was sort of in between projects, and our president said, well, you know, would you be interested in taking this on? And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm creative. I, you know, I've never been on a film set before, but I love film, you know? So I was super naive and threw myself in the ring. And to be honest, I think that was probably the best thing I could have done, because I didn't have all of the preconceived notions of what you should and shouldn't do. And as you know, like, especially by the time I got in, which would have been like 2012, you know, the industry had really changed. It was really about, you know, how fast can you put something out? How cheap can you put something out? You know, how many clicks can you get? The content itself and the quality of the content had really taken a backseat to the monetization and the advertising, and again, just the quantity over quality. So being like such an outlier, I didn't have that pessimism in me. And I was like, wait a minute, let's just go back to Marketing 101 and talk to the customers. And wait a minute, they want storylines. They want, you know, recurring characters. They want Easter eggs. I can do this. Like, I love creative writing, and I've always been, you know, in the arts and in theater. And so I just, you know, networked with, you know, a bunch of people here who were in the biz, who were, you know, in crews and all of that stuff. And I kind of partnered with them and started to just tell stories that like nobody was telling, and, you know, put emphasis on acting and cinematography and all these things that I found interesting. And lo and behold, fans, especially those who wanted to pay for good quality content and were starved for it, also found it interesting. And that's how we were able to build our first few successful studios. And ultimately, what got me to get the directing bug and to move to LA myself and to start directing, you know, and developing projects full time. And I realized, man, there is so much talent in our industry. So much, you know, the level of quality of acting talent, the level of sort of openness and willingness to be daring and to, you know, to try new things. And so many crew people who work on mainstream sets, like the talent is there. We just always wrote ourselves off. And so I just like really leaned in on that and was so inspired by the talent around me that led me to bring the idea of Adult Time as a space to kind of make any show. And I needed that space, you know, and then ultimately hooked me up with a bunch of other cool creators and kind of led us to where we are now. So it was, I think, not having that kind of background in adult was probably the best thing for me. Because even to this day, I'll be the first to say I'm a very lousy pornographer. I just like making movies. And I love seeing people realize how talented they are. And increasingly over the years, I'm less about making my own movies. And I'm more about like finding talent in people and helping give them that confidence and that boost to really show what they got. And that's what Adult Time is for. It's like, that's why we built it.
Well, there's very few people in the adult industry that are written about in Forbes magazine. So what you've done, Bree Mills, has worked out very well. Think about where I came in the early 90s, and the most important thing was spending money on the production. We rented castles and houses. We went to places hours away and everybody stayed in a hotel. We rented these dude ranches where it was like a movie set, like real Hollywood stuff. We had craft services. They would reach out to you by phone a week before. What do you eat? What don't you eat? And I think the pessimism that you experienced when you came in to enter was from people who lived that and had to let go of that when the internet created this demand where it almost became like McDonald's. Like people were like, okay, we got to churn out 20 scenes a week and we've got to have this. And, you know, I would show up on locations and think, and I would say to the director, like, I'm sorry, but I don't feel sexy at this house. This house is horrible. Yes, I mean, like, if I was dating a guy and he brought me back to this house, I would tell him there was an emergency. My dog got out and I had to go home. I mean, but we let all that go. So when you go back to starting to communicate with the fans, what did you do? Was this on a forum where you, how interesting was that time for you?
Yeah. So, you know, again, I was so green that I just went back to really the basics of marketing, which is, you know your customers. So we had made this acquisition of a series of massage websites, which at the time massage, it still is quite a popular niche, but it was really popular.
Yeah, it was. I remember that time. And shot like 1,000 massage machines during that time. They wore it out. They wore it out is what they did.
Oh, yes. It's still going.
They overshot it.
but we bought these sites. And again, we were really like, we had, you know, taken them over from the original owner, and there were third party, you know, crews that were shooting the content. So in theory, like the pipeline was still intact and everything was still functioning. So why were people leaving? You know, why were people canceling their subscriptions? And the sites that we had taken over, we had, I think we must've had video comments enabled, which, you know, we do on most sites. And, you know, I just created an account and I gave myself, again, not thinking too much about it, you know, my name, which is what it is today, which is actually mostly my real name, just sort of squished together. But I went and I started to respond, and I just would, you know, when people would say like, this is garbage or whatever comment they were leaving, I would ask them, you know, like, well, why and what would you do differently? And I realized that there was one site in particular that was like really kind of going downhill, and it was the our lesbian massage site, a site called All Girl Massage. And when you looked at the content, like I totally get why people were complaining. It was super formulaic, same room, same 1, 2, 3, 4 positions. It was boring. And you know what I realized very quickly from talking to that fan base was how loyal they were, how super loyal to the lesbian content genre they were. They were just avid fans, you know, people who clearly were basically saying, we want to give you money. Like, we want this content. We just want it to be better. And, you know, maybe it's because I'm a lesbian and maybe that was like an easy way to get their trust or something, but we were able to like very quickly through talking to them kind of established that there were a few things that were really important, and we were definitely not doing that within the content. So I took, you know, I needed a space to be able to have better conversations. So we got some third party forum and I set it up and I connected it to the members area.
Amazing.
And I said, guys, submit story ideas. And the ones that get voted the most, you know, then we'll do. And we use that forum to post our own scenario ideas so that before we went in to shoot something, we at least had a sense, are people going to like it? And when we saw something that did well, well, that helped us build anticipation because all of a sudden they're involved. I mean, it's crowdsourcing. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And we would credit their names and the, you know, that they inspired by this member. And And then also, And then for me, again, because like I'm super creative and I've always loved storytelling and creative writing, I was like, all right, let's do these, you know, multi-part soap operas, basically, like multi-part sagas and recurring characters. And then the talent actually cared, because it was like, oh, this isn't just some really crappy, you know, written on a bar napkin
gonzo massage scene in the same location I showed up at 2 weeks ago that still sucks.
Like there was something a little bit more fun about it, and then they just became kind of fun to produce, fun to release. And from there, we saw that site quickly go from being the one that was in the most decline to being the one in the most growth. And, you know, me always having what my team lovingly refers to as strategic ADHD, I was like already thinking of what we could do next. And I was like, we need to build a network that is completely dedicated to all girl content. Because like, as you can remember at the time, it was always an afterthought. You know, you might have one lesbian site connected to a big network, or, you know, you tack it on at the end of a day. The content was really not prioritized. But I saw this audience that was like super thirsty and like, again, willing to pay for that porn. We just needed to make something that was worth paying for and was really like worth. So I ended up kind of bringing Girls Way as a concept to the teams. I think we had you on one scene. I think it was right before the end. I remember the day I was like, everybody was like, Lisa is there. Whatever Lisa wants to do, we are going to do it, because Lisa is there. I do remember that. But we, you know, that happened to launch right as lesbian as a kind of keyword became the most searched on tube sites and stuff. So we were lucky, like just the timing into the market was good. And we were able to, you know, ride that wave. And it's still, you know, it's still a successful studio today. I mean, it's definitely not necessarily in its glory years of us going crazy with all kinds of movies and stuff. But that project was the project that made me discover, I loved working with actors, made me discover, you know, about the difference between, or like really building an audience and a loyal audience. And that certainly, you know, influenced the next steps that happened afterwards.
You know, and from a talent's perspective, I can say this, you know, there were a lot of times where I was shooting a girl-girl scene. And when I was an agent, I always would ask my performers, what do you do and what don't you do in your personal life? Because I think it's really important. Like I never did a scene in my personal life that I hadn't acted out in my real life. And I waited to do types of scenes until I started to want and desire them in my personal life. But do you know how many times I was on set with a male director who was like, yeah, we got to shoot this girl-girl scene. You know, let's just shoot it, get out of the way. Yeah. You know, we'll do three positions. And I'm like, but you don't understand that this might be the only scene in this movie that somebody is looking for. And you're treating it. And I get it. But if you don't get what you're shooting and you're not passionate about what you're shooting, it reads to the watcher. It is not misunderstood. Like, it is real. And so there's girls like, I know you're close with a very good friend of mine, Jaden Cole. And this is what she does. And this is what she loves to do. And so, you know, she brings out the best in other people because she gets her craft and knowing and having that desire. But for you to take that mainstream, that business sense, we have always looked at our customers in this industry. Very fortunate for myself to get to go to adult bookstores in the 90s when that was a thing, and really be in these brick and mortar stores, not just talking to the customers, but also to the store owners and what's really looked for in this area. It always amazed me that, you know, I'd go to Huntsville, Alabama, and the desire would be totally different than when I was in Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, and you got to have this understanding. It's boots on the ground. There's that lack of understanding with people who are just stuck in Porn Valley and don't watch content and don't have friends. So you starting this forum and you engaging really put this community together that put force behind Girls Way. Like there was now this like, oh, this is for us. This is going to really, how much did your life change, Bree, when you made this career change because you got to feel what it was like to actually be in the world of sex worker and have the opinions of the outside world that doesn't understand in your life?
Oh, I mean, everything changed. So, you know, I was listening to what you were saying about the whole disconnect between, you know, what actually is important when you're putting together a scene, and oftentimes what people assume is important. And, you know, when I was sitting in an office in a cubicle writing scenarios, and even when I would come down every so often to do a movie, like I was completely naive to so many of the important ingredients. And it wasn't until I moved here and I started to direct more regularly, and I started to really work with talent, that a few things became really apparent to me just in my own journey and my own education. You know, the first was the importance of having something real within the chemistry of the scene. So that doesn't mean that you have to necessarily just cast people who are off-screen couples.
No.
But you need to make sure who you put together want to be together, not because they look good on a data sheet or because you think they're going to look
good. Their names run this much traffic. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
And so, you know, lesson number one, and this has, you know, been, if I was going to say over the last 5-6 years of my career, one of the biggest lessons, and now which has completely revolutionized our casting process, and certainly like any productions that I have within my production unit, is I lead with a cast first, yes list first approach to casting. So if I'm making something and I know I want, like, let's say I was going to cast you in something. You're like the person I have in mind for this particular project. I'm going to reach out to you. I'm going to talk to you about the project, what it's about, what we're titling it, how we're imagining to market it. Get all of those details, you know, in front of you so you can really take a look, see if it's a good fit. And if it is, the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to say, who's on your yes list? Like, of course.
I always would say top five people you want to do this
with.
That's what I would always say.
Exactly. Top five. Because by now you know the story, you know who the other cast members are going to be kind of playing. And if you can tell me, listen, I have really good chemistry with this list of people, there's a very good chance that on that list, there's also going to be somebody who's popular with our audience, who is, you know, trending up for whatever reason. Like, you can still achieve all of that, but you're leading it with the most important ingredient, which is you're going to have a fire scene. Because these two people like each other, you know, or these people enjoy that kind of sex, or, you know, whatever the variable.
Or they bring out the best in each other when it comes to dialogue. I had some men that I work with regularly that we just really could handle a script together well. Yeah. And other performers I loved working with, but they didn't care for dialogue very much. And so
absolutely.
If it was a heavy dialogue project, I'd say, though I love working with him, I know he doesn't love dialogue and we'll be Mickeying it. And I don't want to do that because it has a message here. So all of those things.
Yeah. So that's been like a huge, you know, and that really comes from just working a lot and getting to know on a, you know, really human level. And that is the other thing that's the most important thing. I mean, like I said, when I started kind of coming out and filming regularly, to me, it reminded me of doing theater. And that's what I grew up doing. I did a lot of theater growing up and I did a lot of sports. And both of those are kind of similar experiences where you're with this tight-knit group of people for this sort of condensed period of time and you need to all work together and you all have sort of different skills, but together is what makes the outcome. And I just have always thrived in that kind of dynamic. I've always loved those things. So when I got into LA, and I started to work on projects, I was surrounded by people that were just so excited. We were making movies, you know, we were telling these stories and everybody seemed to be so equally enthused and have a role to play. And man, that is the best drug ever. Like that's so, I just wanted to come back again and again and again. And I, you know, I met my wife who was a performer, who's an OnlyFans creator now. And I had met her in 2016. And so then that added another layer because all of a sudden I fell in love with this person and this person could also had all of these experiences that they had in their past career. And, you know, then when I went on set and I was working with people, all of a sudden I wasn't just looking at it as, you know, comrades and, you know, we're, you know, coming together to make this project. I saw my wife in all of them and that added this sort of extra level of care and compassion. And that really started to open my eyes to the other probably biggest learning that I have had in my career, which is, you know, not only is it important to get people together who are going to be the best fit for each other in all that right ways, but just that the how of the experience that you create is more important than any final video or photo or, you know, promotional material. If you're not paying as much attention to that experience and making sure that it is positive and that the talent are at that absolute nucleus of that positive experience, then the rest of it doesn't matter. And certainly when I launched Adult Time, you know, we've had this vision, myself, and definitely I have such an amazing team who nowadays are really like really leading the bulk of the operations. We had this vision to be an all-inclusive platform and to do porn differently. And one of the things that we wanted to do was reach out to talent that had been kind of outcast by a lot of mainstream porn, and to offer them, you know, really to offer them inclusion and to offer them really beautiful projects that they can star in. And when we did that, again, that humanizing, that kind of further really realizing the impact of what we could do by how we produced, I mean, that changed everything for me. It changed the projects that I make personally, you know, going from not just trying to make stuff that you know, I know is going to be a hit, but also stuff, even more importantly, that's going to use our medium for good, because we have huge influence. Huge influence. And we can use that.
There's a lot of trust that's in a day's work on set. There's a lot of trust.
Yes.
You know, I would say to my crew when I was producing and directing, like, as a performer, you are never more vulnerable than at that moment when you are on set. So the energy in this room can make or break the day. Yeah. And the energy and the support and the trust all can allow this scene to be free-flowing and fun while no one is ever feeling awkward, pushed, you know, in a situation they don't want to be in. You want them to leave, not just with a paycheck. You want them to leave with a sense of pride, with a great connection for everyone, and to look forward to coming back and hopefully crossing paths again, working together again.
Yeah.
So marrying someone in the industry, did it open up your mind to the amount of stigma that is still there? Because here you are, you're tackling big business in this industry, and you're bringing your skill set and your education in. The stigma attached to being a sex worker and being involved in the industry, was it surprising to you?
I don't know if I'm, I think I have deepened my appreciation over my years working very regularly with talent, just to the degree of stigma and discrimination that they and we face, but really, you know, that talent face more than anyone else in our industry. I don't know if that came necessarily from my relationship with Sarah, but definitely I saw the impact of just what it means to be a persona, a public persona in our current kind of digital culture, which is really vicious. And, you know, my wife is a amazing kind of, she's always, and when she was a performer, you know, she was always never took herself too seriously. She always kind of was like pretty true to who she is authentically in her persona. And so, you know, it wasn't, and she, you know, we have two kids. And so when, you know, when she retired from shooting, her real focus for, you know, the last few years has been, you know, being a mom. So she's been really kind of has built an amazing mom group, and she was working in fitness with prenatal fitness for a long time. And so she actually got a lot of support and didn't necessarily have some of the challenges that our colleagues have faced. But I did see just the amount of unpacking that needed to happen, especially in the year after she retired, from just having to get out of your head that just insane amount of pressure that comes from being judged publicly on all sides of the spectrum. You know, half of the world telling you you're a goddess, you're perfect, you're amazing, this hair, you know, is the best hair ever. Like, to the absolute opposite, just the most vicious, horrible, you know, trolls that say things you can't imagine ever saying to anybody. Like, I see that. And I now, again, when I'm working with somebody, when it's somebody especially who I think is just so talented and has so much potential, my first instinct, and maybe it's because I'm a mom, but my first instinct is I hope they're going to be okay. You know, and that's why I'm a huge advocate of Pineapple Support and, you know, what we can do to, help provide, you know, some degree of infrastructure and mental health services in our industry. And just because anybody in a position of influence these days, I mean, that scrambles your brain. So when you add that extra level of vulnerability by like really completely putting yourself out there the way adult performers do, you know, we really need to be there for each other as a result. And that, you know, I've become much more aware and sensitive and conscious of that. And, you know, that's why I do the projects that I do. You know, that's why if somebody wants to write something, I want to give them the platform to write that. I want them to be able to put that out to their fans and say, like, I made this. You know, I'm not just a pretty face or a particular type of sex act. I am all these different things. And, you know, you know, I think the rise of platforms like OnlyFans, coupled with the Me Too movement over the last few years, has been the best possible thing that could help set our industry up for success. And now it's on us, particularly those of us working, you know, in the professional side of the industry, to build that infrastructure that's going to help propel it to a place that's really collaborative and respectful and professional, and using our medium to get people off, but also to make people think and make people feel and, you know, help push some social change, which I think, especially in terms of sexuality and gender, like, if it's not going to be us doing it, nobody else is doing it. No. So we might as well.
And I've met some of the most connected, brilliant, thoughtful, wonderful humans in the industry. Yes. And one of them that I recently met, Jane Wilde. I am thrilled that you have just done a project with Jane Wilde, her first directorial debut called Stars. Tell me a little bit about it, because I love Jane Wilde and I know she has a very brilliant future, but I know she's had a very interesting walk to step mm-hmm. into this industry.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I've known Jane pretty much since Jane started. And what initially I remember about her and what sort of struck me about her was I remember she was an extra on one of my films, and you know, she knew, you know, by like memorization, like every episode I had done, because she was a fan, you know, so she knew my work, and she was really like, you know, much more even knowledgeable about some of the content that I was even at that point. And so I was just really struck by how like the real genuine
She's
dedication
thoughtful.
and thoughtfulness. And any time that she worked for me, didn't matter what project, she always brought 200%. And she wasn't ever afraid to speak her mind. And that's so important. You know, like our industry has this, we're moving out of it slowly but surely, but it has historically had this sort of culture of like, better not say anything. You don't want to be labeled a diva or difficult.
Yeah.
And what I loved about Jane from like, even when she was like 19 years old, you know, like, was that if she had an idea, she would bring it, you know, if she had something that she thought could work better, she would voice it. And I really respected that. And it's part of why we always worked well together. So she came to me in February of this year and she said, you know, hey, can we take a meeting? Like, I want to tell you about this idea that I have for a story that I want to tell. And I try to take every meeting that a talent has, even if I don't know if I'm going to be able to say yes. Because I mean, at the end of the day, if something can't strike any of the boxes, I have a certain
budget.
You're
giving time. Yeah, you're giving time. You're letting someone be heard.
Well, and I think again, you know, if I can give advice on how to start a project or how, you know, then that's still at least paying it forward. And again, that's kind of what I'm all about. So, you know, we took this meeting and I had heard parts of Jane's story before. She had told me a bit. I'd heard on some of, you know, some of the media stuff, that appearances she had made. So I had an idea, and I knew that, you know, again, you know, her entry into professional sex work is one that has happened to in shades to many people, but also people that don't end up going into professional sex work. The experience that she had has happened to many, many, many people, particularly young women. And when she told me her story, by the end of it, I knew that I was going to say yes. I did not want to do I did not personally want to do a feature film this year. I had said, no, you know, like, I've hogged the spotlight for a long time. let's have other people do it. You know,
I've won a ton of awards already. Let somebody else win other awards. They're all stacked up behind you right there. Yeah. All those awards.
But things don't grow if it's just on one person's shoulders, right? So we have, and we work with so many talented directors. I mean, Ricky Greenwood, who was the director of the year winner last year, he did a big movie for us this year. And, you know, like, so we had lots of good, you know, other projects. I think we've got an amazing all-star lesbian film called Women's World coming out next week, directed by Anatomic Media. So we've got lots of projects. I did not need to enter into the playing field. But by the time she had finished telling me her story, it just, again, it hit all the boxes. It aligned with our values. It was elevating somebody's voice, particularly a sex worker's voice, to be able to tell their story, which they never get a chance to tell. And, you know, it also was an interesting story. It was something that it was a very objective way of showing this one person's journey. And that's actually something I really loved about it. And, you know, Jane, she was very much like, I want you to do this, Bree. Like, you know, I would like to be part of it. I'd like to star in it, but like, you know, I would love you to direct it. And I would only trust, you know, you guys to do it. And so I kind of put it in the back of my mind. I'm like, okay. And I said, yes. And then in the back of my mind, I thought, well, I'm not going to say anything, but I want to work with her as if she is me, you know, as if, you know, there is everything I do, I'm going to count on her to bring the same level. So we wrote the script together, but let me tell you, it's her script. I helped format it into such a way that we could film it within our time. But in terms of the vision for the cinematography, in terms of the vision for the story itself and the editing, all, as you know, when you're coming up with something, all the bells and whistles, all the details, the color of the drapes, you know, she really at the end of the day drove that. And when we got on set and we filmed it over the course of 7 days, and it was a very bare bones film. We wanted it to really be an indie film, and for Jane, she was very adamant about, I want to make a movie about my journey that has sex in it, that is uncensored, but I don't want to fall into the trap of, we're shooting this adult movie, so therefore each of those sex scenes need to be 45 minute long, that will inevitably, no matter how good the story, break you out of the story. And then we got to release it in 4 separate episodes over 2-3 months. She was very much like, I really don't want to do that. And I mean, I've been angling for that for years, you know, like I've been trying to get towards, because again, lousy pornography, right? So I'm like, I want to make a pure movie. I've done safer work movies before. I've done, you know, but I was like, yeah, you know what? If that sex scene is 5 minutes in the movie, let's have it be 5 minutes in the movie. If it's 15 minutes, you know, like let's anchor those as part of the story, but let's not have them be this lead up or this, you know, sort of separate piece. And so we filmed it. It's a 2.5-hour movie, and it is very inspired by Sean Baker, who's one of the great indie filmmakers. Again, Jane's inspiration. And when you watch that film, and I will be very happy, Lisa, to send you a copy of it afterwards. When you watch that film, every single shot in that film came from Jane's mind. It really is representative of her vision. And, you know, my role in it as kind of, we ended up at the end of it, I waited till we wrapped and I took her aside and I said, listen, I wasn't going to say anything. I didn't want to set you up. I didn't want you to feel pressure, but you earned this. And the co-writing, the co-directing credit, I want to give it to you. We're going to officially do that. And, you know, it is arguably the best work I've ever been part of. And it, you know, certainly what I think is so beautiful about it is Stars is, we're not trying to say that the pathway into sex work is bad. We're not trying to say that. We're trying to say that the pathway into sex work is life. And life includes really good moments and really bad moments. And it's the choices you make, and it's how you come through that journey. That's what's important. And, you know, we really tried to show that in this film. And I think we did a beautiful job. September 28th, it's dropping one shot one movie, and I'm very excited for the world to see it.
I'm excited for her because Jane is a brilliant young mind. And I'm sure that, you know, in the beginning of this conversation, Brie, you had mentioned how you love to see this confidence build. You love to see talent shine. I bet you that conversation you had with her when you were rapping about the director credit, about co-writer, you sparked something in her because she was doing the work the whole time.
Yeah.
And she knew to come to you to do the work with. You yeah. realize that if she did that same thing with somebody else, they wouldn't have given her that.
Yeah.
And well, that confidence wouldn't be there. And I've been nagging her to write. So it's funny you said February. I think I interviewed her around January and I said to her, you should really start to write notes for a book because I really think your story should be shared. Mm-hmm. Because what you did was you made lemonade out of lemons.
Yeah.
And here you are now and you're brilliant. But Brie, you have done so much with your career and it's been a pleasure to watch. And I know the industry is a better place because you entered it.
Thank you.
And I'm so grateful that I got to have this conversation with you today.
I'm likewise very grateful. I mean, I'm not worthy. You are a legend, Lisanne.
Stop. Have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thank you.
What an awesome conversation about Brie Mills and the journey Brie has been on to get right here, right now. Sharing that connection with Jane Wilde, who is someone I really enjoyed having a conversation with on my other podcast, Dudes Do Better, that you can find on my YouTube channel, The Real Lisa Ann. Meeting Jane was so cool because I always send my guests a copy of my book after the interview. And Jane read the book right away, sent me this incredibly thoughtful email about the book. And to hear that Brie Mills just did this incredible project, Stars, with Jane Wilde, that Jane wrote and directed, co-directed with Brie, like this is just stars collide, right? So I was like, oh, this really was all meant to happen right there. So I love that conversation. Please give Brie Mills a follow on Instagram, The Brie Mills. Just a little bit about my sponsor, Blue Chew. Easy for you to get your hands on Blue Chew. You're going to connect with one of their licensed medical professionals. And once you're approved, you will receive your package in days. No waiting in line at the pharmacy. No awkward conversations. Blue Chew tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped to you discreetly to your door. Check this cute little package out as well. Use my code at bluechew.com at sign up. Use my code Lisa. That's Lisa at signup at bluechew.com. It is time for us to get to the moment you've all been waiting for. That's right. It is the mailbag. If you want to be part of the mailbag, it is asklisaann@gmail.com. I've gotten some good questions. I've gotten some horrible questions. I've gotten some weird questions. But, you know, I like to mix it up for you because some of you kind of hang out for the weirdness. But this one is a good one for me to answer today, even though it's been sitting there for quite some time. I folder them. Like when I'm desperate, I'll pull one out of these folders. If nothing awesome comes in, like Scott's amazing questions, would you rather kind of either or kind of thing from last week. But this one comes in and I think it's timely because my conversation with today's guest, Brie Mills, is a reminder that I am in no way, shape or form anti-porn. I am concerned about the amount of consumption and the age of consumption for sure. I am thrilled that there are people like Brie who are now there present for talent and crew today to work in a better positive environment. But this question comes from Craig. And it says, hi, Lisa, how come you got out of porn? Simple question I get asked all the time. Well, you know, I did turn 50 years old this year. And I definitely did not see myself doing that anymore at 50. But I accomplished my goals in the industry. I set my life into a place I wanted to be. And in 2013, when I had my opportunity to sign my first contract with SiriusXM doing fantasy sports radio, I saw a new future for myself. I knew that this was a stepping stone and I knew that I enjoyed my life in the adult industry and there were so many pros, but there were also so many cons. The constant concern with my health was something that was a burden that I didn't really realize what a burden it was until I left the industry and no longer felt that concern. I remember celebrating my first year. I didn't have to take antibiotics. Like it is a crazy, risky situation. it's also there could be a burnout factor. It's hard on your body. And I just knew that, you know, I had such a good run. I now love that I get to live on the fringe and do activities like Exotica in New Jersey in October, Exotica in DC in December. I'm going to Switzerland to go to Estacia. So I love that I still get to be Lisa Ann, because I will always be Lisa Ann. But everyone knew that a career like that you can't do forever. And it was time, and it was time for change. And I'm so fortunate that I got the opportunity to work for SiriusXM, because it made me a better communicator, made me a better broadcaster, and it opened up the door for me to be a better podcaster as well. So it was time. So Craig, I'm sure you're really upset, because you think you've seen every single scene and there's no more coming out. You don't know what to do, but you could just find a new hobby. Like, yeah, if you've seen it all, you've seen too much. Now we've got one from Jean who says, "Hi, Lisa. I'm a French man, and I would like to tell you that my dream is to meet you. I saw a lot of scenes with you, and I love all your body, your eyes, your mouth, all of you. I hope some days I can see you and take a picture with you." These are the emails that I get by the thousands. And I don't think anybody individually realizes what amount of pressure it is when some one person tells another one person that it is their dream. A dream is so extreme. Like, isn't it a dream to be a billionaire? You know what I mean? Like, isn't it a dream to maybe travel around the world for a year? Isn't it a dream to maybe one day have a dog or a garden? Like, isn't it a dream to have your dream rely around you and not around the dependence of another person? It's bizarre. And every time I read it, it's a heavy thing. So it's like, it's so much pressure, because you don't know how far somebody is willing to go for their dream. I worked my fucking ass off for my dream to be financially secure. How hard is this person willing to go in for their dream? It's next level creepy. But I thought I'd share it with you, because I really don't want to be someone's dream. I want people to have much bigger dreams than just having it revolve around me. Next one. And this one from Aaron, which I'm so easily, I can read between the lines. So I'm going to read you this one. "Hi, Lisa. I'm a huge fan of yours. I love you. My question is, would you ever consider dating a guy who is not in the limelight?" So I find this funny for many reasons. One, the reading between the lines is because Aaron wants to know sub email if he has a chance, because he considers himself not in the limelight. But who is in the limelight that I date, which is even funnier? There's an assumption, which maybe could be kind of correct, that like people stay with like people, right? Like minds or like environments. So like maybe it's an assumption, but I very seldom talk about my personal life. And as a matter of fact, nobody will ever know who I'm seriously. Most people never knew about my husband until I wrote about it in my book. My private life is very private. But the question that Aaron asks is really because Aaron wants to know if he has an opportunity. So I'm just going to say, Aaron, you do not. It has nothing to do with you not being in the limelight or being in the limelight. I'm just going to put it that way, where, you know, I'm just, again, not interested in dating people who email me about dating people. Simple. We got two more right here. Petra writes, and this is a great one. Thank you, Petra, for saving me with a good question once in a while. I appreciate you. Your questions are always great. "Hi, Lisa. Let's go back to your travel experience. After many years of traveling and passport fulfilled with stamps, do you have a favorite airport? My favorite airport is Schiphol, which is Amsterdam's airport. Have a great day. Enjoy the NFL season and your next trips. Greetings to everyone. Petra." Ooh, this is a great question, because I've been to so many great airports. So Sydney, Australia, you know, there's you're lucky if you go to an airport that's not under construction. But you're luckier when you get to go to the airport when the construction was just finished, because I went to Sydney right after the new airport was, you know, unveiled, and it was epic. And I was like, when I go to an international airport on a big trip, I like to go way early. I'll go to a nice restaurant, I'll eat, I'll walk around. I always buy a little small piece of jewelry, nothing crazy expensive, just a trinket that I remember that trip from. I usually buy it at the airport, because the shopping is so good at the airport. I know that sounds crazy. But then during the pandemic, when I went to Istanbul, Turkey, that airport was brand new, just remodeled. And because it was the pandemic, it was so empty that I got like a really good feel of it. Like, I was upstairs in the lounge for Turkish Airways. And you could see down to the shopping area and everything was open, but there was like maybe a time where I'd look and see two people and there's maybe like four or five other people at the lounge. So it was beautiful. The food was amazing. I loved that airport. But you know, the airport to me has always been the window to the world. So even when I go back to LA, I went back for a quick trip last week and it's so under construction. It's such chaos, but I have this like fondness for LA because I landed there for so many years and it meant that I was home. So when I go there and I see the airport, it's even the smell of it. I'm like, there's something about this airport. When you walk outside, the temperature of the air, it's like there's something really comforting about it. And then when I come back to JFK, my favorite artist has all of this beautiful art all over the American Airlines terminal, Fazino. And that was unveiled like right before I got my first apartment here in 2013. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is a sign so meant to be that I'm meant to live in New York. This excites me. And believe it or not, every time I walk by that art, I flash back to those moments and I enjoy it. It passes the time when you're walking, when you're going down the last escalator at JFK on American. There's this huge Fazino piece of all of New York City. And each time I land and I'm going down that escalator, I try to focus on a different corner. Because it has all the restaurants and all the different landmarks and it is so amazing. And I stare at that as I'm going down. It always just makes me feel so good and warm. So I just love airports, but Amsterdam's, I don't remember as much as I should. I went there, I think it was like 2009 for Restaurant Week, which was pretty epic. But I don't remember their airport so much. But thank you, Petra, for the great question. We've got one more right here. It is from our friend Jeff in St. Louis. And Jeff says, you know, Lisa, the show is now streamed on YouTube. It would be nice if the audience could see you as well. Is this a possibility? Regardless, it's going to be nice to have you back on air in the STL. He is talking about the morning after show that I announced I will be doing at 10 a.m. Eastern time. I'm hoping to hop on the camera with them for sure because it would be so much more fun because I get to see them too. So I will keep you all in the know. This week is going to be focus of me connecting with each producer. I've got the flyers made. The artwork is done. I've been quietly working on this for about 6 weeks now, speaking to all the different station managers, getting my time slots. Now it's time for me to connect with the producers, confirm how we're going to be connecting for each show, what time they'd like me to patch in, all of those different things. So I will spend this week setting all of that up so I'm ready. And I'll let you know, Jeff, I'll let everyone know because it's two-part questions in St. Louis, which is a ton of fun. Don't forget to check out Blue Chew. It is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis in chewable tablets at a fraction of the cost. Go to bluechew.com and sign up using Lisa. Give Bree Mills a follow at The Bree Mills on IG. And I thank you all for being here. I look forward to seeing you on Friday for the live at 8 p.m. Eastern time. You can follow all things me at The Real Lisa Ann. Check out my first or second book. The Life is my first book. The Life Back is my second. Both available for you on my store, shoplisaann.com. When you buy it from me, it does come autographed, but you can also get it from Amazon. Amazon has The Life in hardcover, Kindle version, and audio. Amazon also has The Life Back, my newest book, in hardcover, paperback, and Kindle. I have yet to record the audio, but I am sure that I will soon. I was kind of saving it for a winter activity when I wouldn't want to be outside all the time. The flavor of the day today, orange creamsicle. I am right here with you. Check out Fit Soda. You will be glad that you did, just like I am glad that you are right here listening. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Lisa Ann Experience.